from deep inside your radio.
It's coming your way, ladies and gentlemen. There's just no way of stopping it now. It's inexorable. People thought, all right, pubs in Ireland. People thought New York. Yet it happened. Now, Scotland woke up to a new era today. It became the first country in the United Kingdom to introduce a ban on smoking in public places. In Scotland, ladies and gentlemen, pubs, bars, and restaurants filled with smoke will soon be a distant memory. Lighting up in nearly every enclosed public place, now an offense. Scotland will be proud that it has gone smoke-free ahead of any other part of the United Kingdom, says Minister Jack McConnell. In the years ahead, people will look back on today as the day that Scotland took the largest single step to improve its health for generations. Scotland, ladies and gentlemen. So, but speaking of New York, I was there this past week to plug my new CD. Thank you for asking. There'll be more about it later in the broadcast. It's called Dropping Anchors. It's available now, like you'd know from the publicity blitz. Anyway, I was in New York to be part of the mammoth publicity blitz, and I was standing in an elevator with the publicist. You see, I had a publicist to engineer the mammoth publicity blitz. And she notices there's one other passenger in the elevator. It's a rather large woman with the bottom half of her right leg enclosed in a large kind of soft Velcro soft cast with her foot at a 45-degree angle, kind of set that way. And she's got a crutch. And the publicist said, "Oh God, that's such an awful way to get around in New York. I had to walk on crutches once, and I just couldn't believe it. Every time I'd hail a cab, they'd steal it from me." And the other woman in the elevator said, "Yeah, that happens to me about two or three times a day." We're not all New Yorkers anymore. Hello, welcome to the show.
She was a big bone gal from southern Alberta. You just couldn't call her small. You can bet every Saturday night she'd be heading for the Legion Hall. Put her blue dress on and she'd do her hair. Oh, she's been waiting all week. With a bouncing step and a wiggle and a walk, she'd be swinging down the street. You could tell she was ready by the look in her eyes. She slipped in. She wore her face as she entered the place. Yeah, the big bone girl was proud. Now people would come from miles around, gather there to dance. But when the big bone gal came shuffling in, she'd hold them in a trance. You could tell she was ready by the look in her.
Friend Harry's been shot.
I'm fine, Dick. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Humans are responsible for the... This is so embarrassing. This is so very embarrassing as a member of the human race. Humans are responsible for the worst spate of extinctions since the dinosaurs. That's not the embarrassing part. Says this United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity report. Humans are currently responsible for the sixth major extinction event in the history of Earth and the greatest since the dinosaurs disappeared 65 million. In other words, we're not responsible for as big an extinction as the end of the dinosaurs. We got to try harder, people. There's a lot more species to extinct, to extinguish, to extinctify, to extinctipolate. See what I'm saying? So wipe out a species today, won't you? Just for the pride of the race, of the human race. Thank you. And now, news from outside the bubble. This from the Rupert Murdoch-owned Sunday Times of London. They support the war. The villagers of Abu Sifa, near the Iraqi town of Balad, had become used to the sound of explosions at night as American forces searched the area for suspected insurgents. But one night 2 weeks ago, Issa Harat Khalaf heard a different sound that chilled him to the bone. Khalaf, a 33-year-old security officer guarding oil pipelines, saw a U.S. helicopter land near his home. American soldiers stormed out of the Chinook. No, I'm not calling it a Chinook. It's the helicopter. And advanced on a house owned by Khalaf's brother, Fayez. Firing as they went, Khalaf ran from his own house and hid in a nearby grove of trees. He saw the soldiers enter his brother's house and then heard the sound of women and children screaming. Quote, then there was a lot of machine gun fire, he said that last week. After that, there was the most frightening sound of all, silence, followed by explosions as the soldiers left the house. Then he began a frantic search through the ruins of his brother's home. Abu Sifa was about to join a lengthening list of Iraqi communities claiming to have suffered from American atrocities. The Pentagon claims to have investigated at least 600 cases of alleged abuse by American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan and to have disciplined or punished 230 soldiers. But a study by three New York-based human rights groups will claim that most soldiers found guilty of abuse received only administrative discipline, such as loss of rank or pay, confinement to base, or periods of extra duty. Most other cases ended with sentences of 2, 3, or 4 months. Yet the evidence from Haditha and Abu Sifa last week suggested the Pentagon is finding it increasingly difficult to dismiss allegations of violent excesses as propaganda. From the Times of London, ladies and gentlemen. And also news from outside the bubble from the same source. Britain's Attorney General has been asked to block a criminal investigation into allegations that Britain's largest defense company ran a £60 million slush fund to support the extravagant lifestyle of members of the Saudi royal family. What? Attorney General Goldsmith has been asked by government officials to examine whether the inquiry by the Serious Fraud Office into the slush fund is in the public interest. They fear it could provoke Saudi Arabia into pulling out of Britain's largest export contract. Shades of Abu Dhabi. That'd be a good name for something. The Shades of Abu Dhabi, I guess, for a Venetian blind company. Well-placed legal sources say the Saudis are becoming increasingly alarmed about the British inquiry by the Serious Fraud Office. That's right next door to the Comical Fraud Office, isn't it? I think it is. It's examining how the fund was used to provide Saudi princes and princesses, hey, that's fair, with luxury holidays, Rolls Royces, rented apartments, and other perks. Statements by the Saudi government to the chief executive of BAE Systems, which supposedly ran the slush fund, said that the Saudi government is unhappy with the inquiry. Yeah, I'm sure Anthony Pelicano is unhappy right now, too. Police have so far arrested five men. Defense officials, like the Saudis, are becoming concerned about the progress of the Serious Fraud Office inquiry, which was launched a year and a half ago with a series of raids on BAE offices. The subject was raised during a trip by Tony Blair to Saudi Arabia last year. That's serious. Tony doesn't screw around. As the government's senior law office, Attorney General Goldsmith has a constitutional right to intervene in any investigation if he believes it is not in the national interest. He has been approached by a British government department. Sources say it's the Ministry of Defense to halt the inquiry. The ministry argues that if the Saudis pull out of Britain's largest export contract, it would lead to the loss of thousands of jobs. The main beneficiary of the secret fund is alleged to be Prince Turki bin Nasser, son-in-law of the Saudi crown prince. He's said to have been in charge of the orders for warplanes, which have bolstered BAE's profit margin since the early 1990s. He and his entourage were treated to luxury holidays, along with cash payments into American Express accounts. BAE, which is British Aerospace, denies that any of these payments were improper. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes you got to give people nice things to get them to buy your warplanes, you know? Because maybe they don't really need the warplanes all that much. Maybe they're just doing it as a favor, you know, a return favor. Like people do, like nice people do when they're doing nice things for other nice people. So don't look into that, will you? Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get scared. What do you say? In addition to the report about our running the sixth major extinction in the world. But, you know, not the biggest. I want the biggest. I think that's what humans are entitled to. I think that's the kind of folks we are. Here's a report from also the Times of London. Hey, Rupert, they're reporting news. Can you see about that? Dozens of the world cities, including London and New York, could be flooded by the end of this century, according to research which suggests that global warming will increase sea levels more rapidly than was previously thought. It's the first study to combine computer models. I like them. They're pretty. Oh, I see. Of rising temperatures with records of the ancient climate has indicated that sea levels could rise by up to 20 feet by 2100. That would place millions of people at risk. The threat comes from melting ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica, which scientists behind the research now believe are on track to release vast volumes of water significantly more quickly than older models have predicted. Their analysis of events between 129,000 and 116 years ago, when the Arctic last warmed to temperatures forecast for 2100, shows there could be large rises in sea level. So, learn to swim. And dramatic new evidence, this from The Independent, another British newspaper. Dramatic new evidence has emerged of the speed of climate change in the polar regions. Well, that's the same, actually the same story. So you get it from two different newspapers with two different leads, but it's the same deal. You see what I'm saying? The same deal. On the other hand, the Brits aren't immune. The BBC series Alternative Medicine was widely regarded as a great success. Its first episode, broadcast in January, attracted 3.8 million viewers. There were glowing reviews and high-profile news stories about it. But this week, scientists involved in the series have complained that elements of the programs were misleading. The production team was uninformed, and scientists were used as marionettes. Last month, it was suggested the series had a misleading sequence in which acupuncture was used instead of a general anesthetic during open-heart surgery in China. It was claimed the narration underplayed the role of the powerful sedatives and large doses of local anesthetic that were also used during the surgery and exaggerated the role of the acupuncture. Scientists say the program culminated in an experiment that left viewers with the false impression they had seen a major step forward in the understanding of acupuncture. So it's not just in this country where science may take a back seat. Progress toward opening the Yucca Mountain nuclear waste dump is hindered by questions about the quality of scientific and engineering work a year after allegations of fraud emerged. This from congressional investigators this week. The Energy Department's reorganization of the project is yet to put the problems to rest and may create new issues, said the report by the Government Accountability Office. That could delay the Energy Department from applying to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for a license to open the dump. It's not likely that this dump, approved to store 77,000 tons of the nation's most radioactive nuclear waste, could open before 2012. After more than 20 years of project work, DOE is again faced with substantial quality assurance challenges to submit a fully defensible license application to the NRC, said the report requested by a Republican congressman from Nevada. The report said also that despite substantial time and money spent resolving quality assurance issues, the Energy Department has not developed effective management tools to detect and solve problems. Well, and the report recommended strengthening quality guidelines and analysis of problems. Yeah, that's only if you want them solved. Ladies and gentlemen, hopefully later in this broadcast, more about anchormen fleeing the scene of current television news operation. But that is the theme of, did I mention my new CD, Dropping Anchors? And I'm a big believer in giving it away before I ask you to buy it. So this is from the CD, and it's you may have heard this originally on this broadcast, but this is all tarted up for the CD. And you know that Ted Koppel left Nightline, and the format of the program has changed. This is my best guess as to how the format of the program would have changed had Ted stuck around.
From the Ruin Arledge Theater in New York City, where none of the anchors has barnacles, this is Late Night Line with Ted Koppel. Tonight, newsman Aaron Brown, former National Security Advisor Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Paul Schaefer, and the ABC News Symphony. And now, a man who's more serious than his hair, Ted Koppel.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to this new incarnation of Nightline. This program started out as America Held Hostage. It's ending up as Ted Koppel Held Hostage. No, No, I kid the good people at ABC, but we are in this beautifully refurbished theater, and we're going to have a very good time getting to the bottom of today's news. Paul, how...
Yes,
Paul
sir.
Schaefer, how are you, sir?
Ted, I am fine. I'm glad to be on ABC. I've now been on every network in the United States and Canada, except for Global.
Well, Global?
Yeah, it's a Canadian thing. Yeah. It's a swinging little syndication setup.
Paul Schaefer, you are totally steeped in show business.
Well, Ted, let me just say, for my daughter's bat mitzvah,
yes,
we are building a green room in the temple, because...
But, Paul, do you follow the news at all?
I love the news.
You do?
I love the news.
And then I have the feeling I'm being set up for something here.
No, they don't write for me on this show either.
Well, that at least is reassuring. Our first guest tonight is a one-time, sometime occupant of this chair. He was a longtime anchor of his own broadcast over at CNN, where he enjoyed great success until his enjoyment was brought to an end. Please welcome my friend, Mr. Aaron Brown. And, sir, thank you for venturing back into a television studio to visit with us.
Ted, it is so difficult for me to believe how this show has changed. There are colognes on the dressing room toilet.
There are indeed, and there's Irish coffee at the snack table.
Yes, it is impossible to not notice that.
Aaron, like this broadcast, your CNN program was born in crisis, but yours seems to have been ended by crisis as well, specifically Hurricane Katrina. Mm-hmm. In its wake, you seem to have been left in the wake of a former colleague.
Well, that's right, Ted, and I also have to say that that's a perfectly written introductory sentence.
You are too kind.
And that former colleague, Anderson Cooper, was like a younger brother to me. But in a broadcast sense, he was the heart and I was the brains. And I think in our brief time together, we made up almost an entire human personality.
Well, Aaron, you are no slouch yourself when it comes to writing your ad libs. But even before the disaster, you were losing viewers to your competition on Fox, the suddenly monotonous Greta. Thank you.
This sounds like an audience that would appreciate onomatopoeia. But yes, Ted, that is correct. And in fact, as I look forward to new opportunities to practice a more leisurely, thoughtful approach to television news, my agent and I felt that we need to meet the competition head on. So yesterday afternoon I had, and this is very awkward for me to say this, I had some eye work done.
You did.
I did. I brought a before picture for you.
This is unreal.
And well, Ted, this is the most interesting part of the story. We videotaped the surgery, and it's on my demo reel as a six-part deeper look segment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, again, Aaron, we do speak as old friends, and this is a question that did come up frequently in the Van Susteren case. Are you sure it was only eye work? Because...
I swear to you, Ted, nothing but a minor tune-up around the corners of my eyes.
Well, but to tell you the truth, Aaron, something's different around the mouth, too, isn't it?
Well, I don't know, Ted. Maybe it's just the accumulated strain from saying a headline please a half dozen times a night for the past 4 years.
Well, that did become your trademark phrase, didn't it, before the network made you drop it. Favor us with it one more time, if you would.
All right. Ted Koppel, a headline, please. Thank you.
All right. What's the prognosis, Aaron? Are you going to have more of this type of surgery?
Ted, I seriously hope not. I pray that this was an aberration and not the start of a process.
They say it can become addictive.
Only to management. Seriously, Ted, I prefer caffeine.
Well, Aaron, stay with us if you can. Our next guest is a most distinguished scholar and practitioner in the field of international relations. He was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor and a longtime friend of this broadcast. Please welcome Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski. Dr. Brzezinski, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Ted. First time in this circumstance, though.
I should explain. We're going to have a little fun with Dr. Brzezinski tonight. We will discuss some of the more intractable trouble spots in the world. As you can see, he's suspended over a large tank, which we happen to have filled with oatmeal in the first of what we're calling a series of stupid professor tricks.
Stupid professor tricks. He's too smart to do those stupid professor tricks. Yeah.
It looks like very good oatmeal, Ted.
Well, at these prices, I should hope so. All right, Doctor, let's start out with the very difficult situation between India and Pakistan.
All right, Ted, India is a regional superpower. Pakistan is a problematic regional fulcrum type nation. And between the Hindus and the Muslims.
Well, that's very well done, sir. I hope that isn't one of your good suits.
Well, it isn't anymore.
It certainly isn't. What about Central Africa, Dr. Mm-hmm. Brzezinski? Do we just have to wait for the Rwanda-Congo tribal conflict to burn itself out?
I don't think so, Ted, and let me tell you why. And the next thing you know, you've got another Robert Mugabe on your hands.
Or another Joseph Mobutu.
Well, I'm the one getting wet. Let me use my example.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. And finally, because we are running out of both time and oatmeal, give us a roadmap, if you can, of how we get from where we are now to peace in the Middle East.
Ted, the key is the Iranians. The Saudis are trying to steal a march on them at the moment, but into a bona fide peace process.
Yeah!
Dr. Brzezinski, thank you so much for participating in our first stupid professor trick.
It was my pleasure, Ted.
Stupid professor tricks, yeah!
Thank you, Paul. And the transcript of Dr. Brzezinski's full comments will be on our website, so you can actually find out what's on his mind. What's on my mind is thanks to Aaron Brown,
thanks,
Dr. Brzezinski, and, of course, our own Paul Schaefer.
Yeah, thank you, Ted.
For helping me through this first broadcast. You know, change is never easy. We do hope to find this a more comfortable fit as time goes on. Tomorrow night, Dr. Anthony Fauci of the Centers of Disease Control and our list of the top 10 pedophile priests. That's our broadcast for this evening. Good night.
This has been ABC News Late Night Line. For a video recording of this program, call a friend who has TiVo. More people get their news from ABC News than is good for a healthy democracy. Good night.
Somehow I thought you'd love to be like that. Didn't know it hit me when I felt the blast. The sky is falling, you know you left me in
shambles, shambles of my heart. Like a hurricane, I got no shelter from the driving rain. Baby, you wiped out everything, left me nothing but shambles.
You're out dancing, you ain't thinking about me. I'm in my slippers, I'm watching Jeopardy. There's no trace of us in all of this debris. But what do you care? You know you left me in
shambles, shambles of a heart. Shambles, shambles of a love. You crashed through like a hurricane.
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, in our continuing search for the most expensive banana in the world, I think we may have found a winner, thanks, unfortunately, to a natural disaster. Australians may soon have to fly to New Zealand to satisfy their craving for the nation's top-selling grocery item, the banana. Supplies may run out in days. Cyclone Larry last week wiped out 90% of the domestic. See, Australians actually grow their own bananas. How peculiar, because they have a tropical area in their country, wiped out 90% of the banana crop. Prices raced towards $6 a kilogram. I don't know how much that is. I don't know what a kilogram is. Supplies are dwindling fast. We're still trying to get an accurate assessment of the damage from our suppliers. We know that. Okay, so that if you want the world's most expensive banana, I recommend. Well, I recommend Australia anyway. By the way, speaking of which, the different for those who've never been able quite to figure out the difference between Australia and Canada, here it is. Australia has a new tourism campaign called Where the Bloody Hell Are You? Canadian officials have banned it. Now, British officials cleared it after thinking a while about the use of the word bloody because that's actually a curse word in Britain. But the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation has refused to run the Where the Bloody Hell Are You ad because of the word hell. It just shows you the different taste levels of audiences in various culture, said a spokeswoman for the CBC. Hell is a problem for us in terms of kids and family viewing. It comes under the category of taste, and in these situations, we listen to what our audience tells us. And they said to take it out. So there you go. You can say hell in Australia, but not in Canada. Now, ladies and gentlemen, back after so many weeks, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Can we say hell here? I don't know. FCC is fining a lot these days. Let's all move to Australia where we can swear to our heart's content. Austin, Texas Mayor Will Wynne says he's sorry for getting physical with a man who confronted him. Quote, on Friday evening, I was briefly attending a reception in the courtyard of the apartment buildings where my daughters and I live when I was verbally confronted by a man I did not know. Unfortunately, the statement continues, I let the situation upset me. And after the man refused my request to leave me alone, I physically escorted him from the property. I apologize for any embarrassment my actions may have caused anyone involved. That physical escorting can hurt. The Anglican Church in Wales has apologized to Muslims after printing a cartoon satirizing the Prophet Muhammad in its Welsh language magazine. I guess the Welsh are the last to hear. The Church in Wales has issued an immediate recall of all copies of the latest edition of the magazine called Church following the reproduction. The drawing reproduced from the French daily Francois satirizes Muhammad by depicting him sitting on a heavenly cloud with Buddha and Christian and Jewish deities. He's being told, don't complain, we've all been caricatured here. Yeah, that's offensive. CBS Sports this week thanked Northwestern State and basketball coach Mike McConathy for providing access and apologized for an on-air disclaimer, which seemed to indicate that inappropriate language was broadcast during the coverage of the Demons locker room at halftime of the second round loss to West Virginia. McConathy gave CBS permission to bring the camera into the locker room. Midway through the second half of the game, CBS apologized for inappropriate language, which apparently had gotten onto the telecast during the halftime segment featuring Northwestern. Tuesday, CBS Sports Vice President of Communications Leslie Ann Wade said no Northwestern State personnel said anything that violated widely accepted broadcast standards. The network regrets, she said, any confusion caused by an on-air apology pertaining to comments overheard on an in-house system at the arena. In no way did the network intend to connect the people of Northwestern State University with the comments, unquote. The New Zealand broadcaster Channel 4 says it is very sorry for any offense it caused by showing the controversial South Park Bloody Mary episode. Chief Operating Officer Rick Friesen sincerely apologized for any offense taken and said the broadcaster would not repeat the episode, but send a copy to Isaac Hayes' house. Nope, I made that up. ESPN and reporter Jason Stark apologized Thursday for his tasteless remark involving the manager of Cuba's World Baseball Classic team, but Stark said there was no indication he will be disciplined by the network. In an ESPN.com, this is on the internet now, ladies and gentlemen, piece about Japan's win against Cuba in the championship game Monday. That was the tournament in which the entire world competed in baseball, not to be confused with the World Series. Stark wrote that Cuban manager Higinio Velez spent the first inning managing like his raft was on fire and it didn't work out too caliente. Spanish for hot, unquote. Stark reached on his cell phone, said, quote, I apologize to anyone I may have offended. I really feel badly that I wrote that. I regret it. I will never do it again. Stark is known for taking a humorous approach in his writing, was referencing the fact that Velez used three pitchers in the first inning. Says ESPN's statement, the comment was clearly in bad taste. Jason is aware of it and recognizes his error. It has been removed from the column, and we apologize. Touchy, touchy. A St. Louis radio station quickly fired a talk show host for uttering a racial epithet as he talked about Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on his morning show this week. Dave Lenahan apologized on the air immediately after making what he said was a slip of the tongue. KTRS President and General Manager Tim Dorsey agreed the remark was accidental, but said it was nonetheless unacceptable, reprehensible, and unforgivable. Lenahan had been heaping praise on Rice, who has frequently said she aspires to run the NFL one day. Lenahan said on the air, she's been Chancellor of Stanford. She's got the patent resume of somebody that has serious skill. She loves football. She's African-American, which would kind of be a big coon. A big coon. Oh, my God, I'm totally sorry for that, unquote. He said he had meant to say coo instead. Listeners soon began calling the station to complain. 20 minutes after the utterance, Dorsey went on the air to apologize to Rice and listeners. There can be no excuse for what was said, President and General Manager Dorsey said. Dave Lenahan has been let go. There was enough hate. We're certainly not going to fan those flames. Unquote. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, former world heavyweight boxing champion Mike Tyson apologized this week for his violent past following controversy surrounding his visit to Britain. Tyson has been in England to referee the World Cage Fighting Championships and go on a dinner chat show tour. He apologized for violent background while refereeing world cage fighting, you see, ladies and gentlemen. It all makes sense when you realize that the apologies of the week are a totally copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Wallace announced this week that he is leaving 60 Minutes. He's retiring. He feels he's too old to continue. He'll still be doing some pieces for the broadcast, but as a regular member of the 60 Minutes team, he is retired. He announced it. Then he went on Larry King with his son Chris for another one of those father and son things. So, and it's the end of an era, of course, and just another bad day at Black Rock next here on the show.
Hey, listen, Michael, great hour. Oh,
thank you, Brother King. Thank you, Chris.
Oh, no problem, Dad. Anytime.
You know, Mike, you're one of my favorite all-time guests, right up there with Queen Noor.
Well, she is a fine queen.
Not a bad pair of gams either, you know, for royalty.
Yeah. Larry, I'll see you next retirement.
You want a girl to take your makeup off? Crystal, honey, come here.
No, I'm fine. I didn't top up my tan last week, so...
Excuse me, Crystal, I'm looking for...
Brother Rather.
Well, Michael. Great interview, sir. Yeah. Brother King, how are you, sir, please?
Dan, couldn't be better. You know, bad cholesterol is under 115. What's to not like?
Daniel, what brings you up here to the Time Warner Center?
Ooh, take my heard about this fancy new dinner place I wanted to try. It's called Orders. Care to join me?
Well, I...
Supposed to be the most expensive restaurant in the Time Warner Center.
Gosh, I really should try that.
Hey, you gotta eat somewhere.
Well, I had dinner. I mean, Larry, it's 10 o'clock.
Oh, look, it was the earliest reservation I could get.
Whoa, that expensive and that tough to get into? It's gotta be good.
Maybe I'll have a drink with you.
Dan, when are we getting you back on for the full hour?
Well, next time I have a piece on 60, Larry, we'll need the promotion.
Next time he gets a piece on 60, Larry, I really will be dead.
Thanks, fellas.
So, Brother Wallace, an elegant exit, sir.
Well, you know, Daniel, there have been so many inelegant ones lately.
Oh, tell me about it, Hoss. The towel man at 21 still won't take my tips.
And you know it's true, Brother Rather. The allure of getting on a plane to go read some producer's questions to a guy who's too dumb to know how to steal without getting caught was beginning to pale.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Good evening. Do you have a reservation with us tonight?
I do, rather for, well, now it's two.
All right, sir, and that was for what time?
It was for 10.
Mm-hmm. You are a little late.
It's all right, Rosemary. I'm with him.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Wallace. Excellent show with Mr. King tonight.
No. Did you see it?
No, I was working here, but I was listening to it on my cell phone. Right this way, gentlemen.
Listen to it on her cell phone?
Mm-hmm.
Why the heck do we bother with makeup?
Well, really, just in case you forget to top up your tan.
Here we are. Very private. Right next to the kitchen.
Thank you, please. So, Brother Wallace, can't say I'm not disappointed.
In what, the Knicks?
No, sir. To put it shirt cardboard straight and army ant tough, I'm disappointed in you, Hoss.
Daniel, even a shameless ham like Lawrence Welk knew when it was time to quit.
Who now?
Lawrence Welk. What's the matter, Brother Rather? You don't watch PBS?
I'm just...
Good evening, gentlemen. Will the third person be joining you shortly?
It's just us. Thank you.
I'm sorry, sir. The table is set for three.
Well, we didn't set the table, sir. Please, we just sat down at it.
I see. Welcome to orders. A menu for each of you. A wine list each of you.
Thank you.
A dessert card for each of you.
Thank you.
The desserts need to be ordered at least 2 hours in advance. And the history of the restaurant for each of you.
History of the restaurant? I thought you just opened.
We did, but it was a long negotiation to get the space.
Mm.
We outbid Emerald.
Well, congratulations, to be sure. I think my friend here is just going to have a beverage of his choice.
I'd like a martini. Do you have sapphire?
We do not, sir.
Yeah.
You might check our gins of the world on the back of the wine list.
I'm just going to order a couple of starters. I'm hungrier than a trapped coal miner, but it's kind of late and...
Fine, sir. It is a prefix menu, so... Do you want to order a main course that you don't intend to eat?
I'll have his main course.
All right, sir. And what about your own?
Why don't you just give us a couple minutes to strategize here, compadre?
Yes, sir. The kitchen closes in 10 minutes.
Thank you. Michael, there aren't that many of us left. People who know that Ed Murrow wasn't just a character in a movie. We needed you in the starting lineup, sir. Not on the bench.
Oh, I'm not on the bench. I'm still doing pieces. I'm probably going to get an interview with the president of Iran.
I thought I would... Well, that's steak dinner splendid, sir. It really is, but...
And there are a lot of people behind me in line at 60 who, you know, deserve their chance. The longer I'd stay, the more people there'd be secretly praying for my untimely demise.
Well, this isn't about individuals anymore, Michael. This is about the last stand of the soul of a once great organization. I mean... Once Sister Couric takes over the evening news, this place will be more up for grabs than a Bangkok rent boy.
Daniel, you read my press release. You saw my interview with Larry.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I really am tired of the grind. I mean, who needs it? What are we doing anyway? Informing a democratic populace or just keeping the network's lights on until the next version of CSI can be queued up?
Never heard you talk this way before, sir.
Never had this kind of service.
Sister Cora comes in with a platinum contract. She's immediately a major league flat-out center of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
With you gone, who's the center of gravity for our side?
Well, Daniel, I think our side is tired. Anyway...
Have we come to some conclusions, gentlemen? Or shall I just charge you for the dinners and you can take a rain check?
Well, I just think we'll vacate the premises double pronto. How's that?
Would you like to donate your desserts to underprivileged fine dining patrons?
No thanks anyway. Good night.
Well, sir, I'm sorry to see you feel that way.
Well, Daniel, it's been a good long fight, and who knows, maybe once she gets in here, Katie Couric might be better than you expect. She might grow in the job.
Mm-hmm. If she does, they'll find a surgeon to scrape it off her. Good luck, Brother Wallace.
Oh, you too, brother. Larry!
Hey, Michael. Thought of my two amigos are here. I gotta try the place. How is it?
Great.
Great.
Take our table. It's the one by the kitchen.
All right. Thanks, fellas.
Be sure to order the main course.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. An Edison, New Jersey rabbi has sparked a quiet debate among Jews in the township by calling on God to smite Iran's president with, quote, a horrible disease. Rabbi Bernhard Rosenberg, religious leader of Edison's congregation Bethel, issued the prayer December 27th at a Hanukkah menorah lighting. During the ceremony, Rosenberg uttered a prayer to God and then added, quote, may you look out for soldiers in Israel and bring home our soldiers in Iraq. And the Holocaust denier president of Iraq that he gets some horrible disease and never speaks out against Jews again, unquote. And over in Afghanistan, where there's some confusion right now as we're airing as to whether... The gentleman who converted from Islam to Christianity will be tried and, if found guilty, sentenced to death for his conversion. This from Ahmad Shah Ahmad Zai to Asia Times Online. Quote, regardless of the court decision, there is unanimous agreement by all religious scholars from the north to the south, the east to the west of Afghanistan that Abdul Rahman should be executed. Ahmad Shah is a prominent Mujahideen leader and was acting prime minister in Afghanistan before the Taliban. Quote, there is widespread dissent among the masses against the activities of Christian missionaries. These missions exploit the poverty of Afghan people, and they pay them to convert. These activities will only translate into fierce reactions, as Afghans do not tolerate anything against their religion, he said. Says renowned Muslim intellectual Shahnawaz Farooqi, if somebody tries to practice his religion or faith, Muslim society will not stop him or pressurize him to change. Nobody is allowed to even motivate a non-Muslim to change his religion. However, for a Muslim to change his religion, he will have to be executed because it is related to an ontological debate. If somebody at one point affirms the truth and then rejects it or denies it, it would jeopardize the whole paradigm of truth. This is such a big offense that the penalty can only be death, unquote. News of the godly concludes this edition of Le Show, as well it must. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, only megahertz when you laugh. On channel 136, it's Sirius Satellite Radio around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'll be just like you going out and buying my new CD and DVD, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. You know, I'd give it away if I could. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau, I say, to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists always available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and comes to you through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.